This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast. I am stoked to have you on. We have worked in a professional capacity for quite a while, man. And so I'm excited to actually sit here screen to screen and share a conversation.
No, thank you for having me on, mate. It's been very much looking forward to this. It's been a long time coming. I'm glad we're able to sit down and catch up and, yeah, get to know each other a bit better as well.
Yeah, likewise, man. Well, and you have your San Diego jersey on, and I was just saying that one of my favorite saxophonists regularly performs the national anthem for the Padres, correct?
That's cool, man. Yep. I like that.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty cool, man.
I said, mate, it's awesome. Me and my wife, we were there last year in San Diego. So that's why I have a Padres jersey. That's why we're Padres fans, because we went to see him. So we may have seen your friend.
Wow.
If he was performing at a Dodgers game last year.
Yeah, I bet he was. So, Tom, for people that aren't familiar with you, can you just give us a little rundown of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, of course. So my name's Tom, obviously. My artist name is Wood, with a full stop at the end. And I also run Lo-Fi Cafe Records. So a bit of a two-sport kind of guy. I'm an artist and a record label guy too. I've been producing now, producing as Wood since 2021. We formed the Lo-Fi Cafe Records label in 2022. And we've been sort of working with artists in the genre ever since then.
Wow. Well, and man, I didn't realize that you only started in 2022, because I mean, the label's decently sized for 2022, man.
It's gone well. We're blessed. It was a funny one. The Lo-Fi Cafe brand initially started off as a playlister. That was before I was an artist as well within the lo-fi genre. It was about August 2020. So kind of middle of COVID time. As the brand grew, as the playlists kind of took off, I am from a producing background myself. I studied music production at university. Before then, it was college as well. So me and a friend, his artist name is Mike Miller, and he is he's a brass player by trade. You know, he plays lots of instruments, but cornet is his main one. And we sort of got together. I created just a very, very basic drums and piano, sent it over and said, do you fancy just doing something over this? And that was kind of how we initially got how I initially got into creating lo-fi music. The brand sort of grown alongside my artist profile too. So it was, it was really fun to do. At first, we didn't think anything of it. Like, we just thought, we're going to make a track together. If it gets 100 plays, sweet, mm-hmm. we're laughing. I think in its first week, it did about 20,000.
Wow.
And that was a brand new artist, brand new track. And that's when I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. Yeah. that's sort of how my artist and the label side of it, because the Lo-Fi Cafe Records side, I always kind of had in mind, but didn't quite know what or when anything would take off with that. Mm-hmm. That was the artist side of it. Like I said, early 2021. And then, just over a year later, I started the record label side. And yeah, it just snowballed since then.
Wow. That's incredible, Tom. And I love what you said about that. Getting those 20,000 streams in the first week. And when I first came into the lo-fi scene, I had success with my very first release, and it certainly ignited my passion for the genre. Of course, like having immediate success, it's like, whoa, okay, I'm gonna keep doing this. That makes sense. And it's always a lot of the individuals that I've had on as guests have shared similar stories, like that initial success just lights the spark of like, whoa, this is possible.
Exactly.
Like I'm gonna pursue this as hard as I can.
Exactly. It really does kind of give you that kind of drive to think, wow, this is actually a thing that could happen. Mm-hmm. And it's not to say that obviously there are artists out there who wouldn't have had that immediate success and will still kind of be grinding away trying to get heard. Mm-hmm. And obviously those kind of success stories I think are absolutely fantastic when someone's been grinding for so long and then eventually break through.
Totally.
But you know, it just sort of happened so quickly, and I think it's a bit of a testament to how cool everyone is within the genre as well. Like speaking to playlisters, because obviously playlists are king nowadays in modern music anyway. So, you know, if you're not in a playlist, unfortunately, it's going to be hard to kind of crack any or get any ears on your music.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit of a testament to how cool playlisters are within the genre. Obviously, you get certain ones that try to put like a paywall behind it and stuff like that. Which is one thing with Lo-Fi Cafe that I've always had done since we first started in August. It was always, there's a free level of submissions regardless. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, it's just nobody should be pay for play anyway. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it happens a lot. But in the lo-fi genre, it seems to be, you know, everyone's really cool. That's really kind of how I got into creating music and stuff like that, or even creating the record label side, is because I knew that we had relationships that you could build very easily to, you know, and everybody sort of is supportive of each other's music, labels, playlists as well. So it's really cool to see. And I've worked in the music industry within different genres in the past, before lo-fi anyway, and just the difference between how nice people are is just night and day. The community is really cool, and it always sounds a bit corny calling it a community, but it actually is. Like, mm-hmm. There's no other way to describe it. Like, oh, everybody's just really friendly, really warm, and easy to talk to.
Yeah. And Tom, I certainly, later on in the conversation, I certainly want to talk more about what you've experienced on the business side of things and in some industry shifts. So I just want to mention that so I mentally remember to go back to it. But I want to hear your experience within the other musical genres. So I personally, I have my toes dipped in the lo-fi world and the electronic world, and they are completely different landscapes, certainly.
Yeah.
And the withholding of information, the competitive nature, sometimes the drama, it can be exhausting from the electronic side of things. And as far as like the brand development, where like playlists are king in the lo-fi world, like social media is king in the electronic world. Like you know, if you have 15,000 followers on Instagram, like you can have 1,000 followers on Spotify and get plays, and it's things are kind of flipped around. So I want to hear I want to hear your experience working in other genres and what that looked like.
Yeah. So I think for myself, before Lo-Fi Cafe was a thing, I was working at a record label in Manchester, doing lots of things. It's kind of a bit more of a classic indie set where everybody is doing lots of different roles. So, you know, I was distribution. I was also A&R at one point, hiring, signing new artists, lots of stuff like that. And also a key part of it was playlist promotion. It was cool in a sense to work with these different genres. There was pop, there was electronic, there was acoustic as well. There was a really wide range. So you're trying to develop relationships with playlisters from all over the spectrum and maintain that even if you haven't got releases that are coming out and stuff like that. It's like, oh, right, okay, so let's keep this going. Let's, you know, it can be quite exhausting. But like, I think you touched on it yourself, like the other genres, they don't seem to have, or it just seems to be very competitive. Like everybody's, nobody wants to try and help anyone out. It's always, you know, you do something for me, I'll do something for you. And yeah, it's a little bit disheartening in that sense. But it like I said, it was very nice just to be able to like dip your feet into all these different genres. So mm-hmm. I wasn't really producing at the time when I was working at the label. I graduated from uni about like 4 years earlier, 3 years earlier. And I was kind of putting that on the back burner. I was happy enough at a record label, working within the industry, like very, very fortunate. And yeah, so it was kind of a new experience to deal with these and release with this kind of these different artists from all these different places. But yeah, I think the playlists within lo-fi, or the playlisters, they're much more friendly, much more approachable. I don't really know how to even, I haven't really thought about how to phrase it as such. But I think approachable is the key thing, really. Half the time an electronic music playlist will, they'll put up a pay barrier straight away. I'm sure you've come across that yourself. Or SubmitHub, for example, and you just kind of throw money in. There's a low chance of success anyway with that. So yeah, I don't really know how much more I can say on those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, Tom, I want to hear your production story, 'cause I'm intrigued how you were on the working for a label and then you had the itch and the drive to dive into production. So I do want to hear that, but before asking that question, I do want to comment on, the openness, man. And I think, so when like I said, I'm still in the electronic world. I'm still in the lo-fi world. But when I first entered the lo-fi scene in 2020, it was just a breath of fresh air. Really, yeah. It was just so refreshing. Of one, I had success on my initial release, which, you know, showed me that it was possible. I lucked out there. But then just all the conversations and recording saxophone for individuals, and I think I started the podcast within like 7 months of being within the community.
Oh, nice.
And being able to log on and record a conversation with strangers from all over the world, you know, I think that's relatively unique, because it's, I guess, one, I love hearing origin stories, right? Like, it's like, who are you and how'd you end up where you're at and where are you going? And to be able to have that with so that conversation with so many artists in our scene is so special. And I think starting a conversation or starting a podcast like this in any other genre would be hard, because before an artist would even agree to be interviewed, it's like, well, what's your reach? What's the benefit of me coming on and sharing this conversation? Where if I in the without our scene having too big of an ego, if we compiled the amount of streams that every guest of this podcast has ever accumulated, it'd be in the billions, you know, which it's a nice, you know, little resume to show to other communities if we had to, if the ego was provoked. But
we're winning that war. We're definitely going to win that war.
Yeah, man. But so Tom, kind of walk us through this process, man. So like your A&R, you're helping with playlist pitching, you're helping with distribution. What made you want to pursue music production?
So it's always been like something I've had as a hobby, really. You know, I think obviously I mentioned to you earlier, I went to university for music production, and I'd always had it in the back of my mind. It's something that I'd kept up, not commercially, but just for fun. You know, just putting together little pieces here and there. Never really found a genre to stick to, because I was like, oh, it's not going to be for commercial release anyway. I'll just play about with it, learn some new techniques maybe. And it was always just for fun. And then Obviously, started the Lo-Fi Cafe in August 2020. Could see that the playlists were getting some traction. Thought, oh, it could be quite fun to, like, I love lo-fi music. I'm curating these playlists. It could be quite fun to make a track. If it's good, I'll release it. And, you know, it might get 100 streams. You know, certainly from a playlist, it can get, you know, X amount. I can't remember how many it was at the time. I was like, you know, it'll be fun. Let's give it a go. So I already kind of had the knowledge within that to sort of start it. And yeah, it was just a willingness to really try, I think, just to essentially put yourself out there. It could have absolutely flopped and we wouldn't be talking today. Mm-hmm. I'd still be, well, I might, you know, you never know where I'd be, yeah. But it's something that you have to sort of be willing to put yourself out there for. And you still kind of feel that with every production you have now, every release you have, it's like, oh, this could go wrong. Yeah. But yeah, no, the actual production side of it is, like I said, something I've always had in me. I think it really started back in high school. End of high school is when I first started getting into music production. You can cut that bit. I didn't say music production. But I had an older brother who had Logic Pro. He was in college doing music production as well, or music technology. So I kind of got that sort of first entryway from him. And then, yeah, it just kind of spiraled from there. I went to college, did it, went to university, did it, had a lot of fun. And then it was out into the real world after university. And that wasn't straight into the industry. Mm-hmm. It was kind of rubbish jobs. Mm-hmm. I was going to say a different word, but, yeah. You know, podcast. yeah, you know, it was kind of that. And then finally got an opportunity to be within the industry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just sort of how it all kind of started.
Yep. Wow. Well, and I love that you entered the lo-fi scene as a playlister first, as a curator for playlisting. I think you're the first person as a guest that has had that entrance into the scene, which is pretty cool. Especially yeah. as you're like curating all of this music, you're like, well, maybe I should just make this. maybe I should try.
And it wasn't out of I could do this better than these guys. Like 100%, like the artists that I play this that have amazing music, so much better than mine. I just, it's just something I like the idea of, you know?
Yeah. Well, and so kind of, so, and this was August 2020, correct? As you're curating these playlists.
Yes.
So walk us through kind of the science of growing playlists and how that has evolved over the past 3 years at this point. Wow. I can't believe that was already 3 years ago.
I know. It's COVID just stole so many years. Yeah, like it was horrible. but yeah, so, at first the plan was to curate these playlists, essentially for myself initially. It was to, I was putting music in there that I liked, that I would work to. Obviously, lo-fi is notorious for being like work beats, study beats, that kind of thing. So it was all stuff that I would listen to. And I just, the actual Lo-Fi Cafe idea just kind of, I'd love to say there was like a huge, great story about it, but it just kind of came together so quickly that I don't really remember when the idea came forth. It just happened. Mm-hmm. So then I set up this Instagram page, and my plan was always weekly updates. I'll start off with four playlists. So it was sleep, study, cafe, and chill, I think it was. Oh, that's testing my memory now. Yeah, I think it was those four that I initially started with, you know, hitting the big moods. Mm-hmm. Because again, at the time, working in the industry, you could see that these were the moods that people were listening to. Or, you know, all the big lo-fi playlists that were getting streams all kind of followed the same pattern. So yeah, I just thought, you know, create some rough artwork. I think it would have been on Canva at the time, maybe, or like Photopia, something like that. Just create something quick. The plan was regular updates. So every week it would be updated with new music. I used to kind of really have a push on new artists. You know, if an artist has less than 5,000-10,000 monthly listeners, what can we do to help them if I can? Obviously, once the stream started going up, it was quite cool to have when people were submitting their music to my players for free. Yeah. If they'd have like 5,000 monthly listeners, it was quite cool to watch them just kind of go up and up and up. Mm-hmm. And it'd be like, oh yeah, like we've actually helped an artist here. That's great. But yeah, so that pushing on social media of every time there's an update, it'd be a story post saying playlist update. It'd have the playlist artwork in there. It would tag the artists that I've updated with. So if they have, you know, a couple of thousand social media followers, if they were kind enough to repost that onto their story, it would obviously reach their fans, reach their audience. It'd reach other artists within the genre. So then we'd got more followers on Instagram. We got, I hope, more ears on our music. Mm-hmm. And you could kind of see that, you know, as the weeks went by, the listener count was going up, the stream count was going up. So yeah, that kind of social media presence and almost forcing myself into the lo-fi community in that sense, you know, just following as many artists as possible, doing these regular updates, tagging as many artists as I could possibly tag. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was always the plan. I don't know if you can call it a science. It was just, you know, an idea that just happened to work out.
Wow.
And I think there's an element of luck as well, especially when it comes to like getting eyes on your playlist within Spotify. Because obviously not everything comes from social media. Not every fan comes from social media. So there's an element of luck as well, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think having that that drive and that push to do these weekly updates, to keep posting, keep pushing, that's something that could have very much, if I hadn't have done that, it could have just fallen at the first hurdle, you know? And then it was, once we sort of got over that initial step, it was creating new content. So creating new playlists. How can we make them different to what we have? How can we also keep touching on the focus points that people listen to? So I think jazz, lo-fi jazz was another one that I created around that time. And it was just, again, it was about building the brand from there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it fortunately it worked out very well, and was able to kind of grow into what it is today. But that was the basic steps that I took to start it all.
Well, and Tom, it's sometimes when the answer is as simple as hard work and consistency, you know, like sometimes people don't want to hear that, myself included. I'm like, man, how'd you do it? And it's like, well, I've worked really hard over time and I stay consistent with it.
It wasn't, to be fair, I was working full time at the time. So it was a very much a evening and weekend thing that I was mm-hmm. doing. And yeah, it was, you know, it was a bit of a push. Yeah, I hate the fact that it was that. I wish I had like a very easy answer for people. But once you obviously get your brand rolling and stuff like that, it gets easier. Mm-hmm. Slightly, yes. Not 100%. You've still got a lot to maintain. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's something that you've got to have that initial push to mm-hmm. be able to sort of do it.
Yeah, and so Tom, you mentioned these hurdles, and I want to talk about Spotify specifically. Have there been any shifts within Spotify that have created hurdles for private playlisters? And I'm saying that from an artist perspective of this past year with editorial placements has been incredibly difficult in comparison to years before. And I'm curious to what those internal hurdles within Spotify, like what those look like or if they exist for private playlisters.
It's hard to say really, because A lot of it is algorithmic. So there's no like particular shift as such, but you know, your playlist might not be appearing in the top. Say I search lo-fi sleep, my playlist might not be there, or mm-hmm. lo-fi chill might not be there. And so it's always kind of those barriers that are, you know, it's like most things nowadays, it just seems to be there's an algorithm that works against you at every opportunity. That being said, I do think Spotify, in comparison to other platforms, when it comes to user playlists, is so much better. Like there's a much clearer and a higher chance, I feel, of getting ears on your playlists on Spotify than there is for Apple Music. Although Apple Music, I think, has taken some steps in recent times to try and get a bit better. But it's still, you know, you have to... They have like a 6-page document on playlist best practices. And if you're not really coming up with that kind of within their guidelines of that, then your playlist doesn't get like put into the public sphere and stuff like that. So I feel like Spotify is sort of much better than that sense. I haven't tried, or one plan that I do want to go forward with is to sort of move on to Tidal and stuff like Amazon Music to see what kind of playlist traction we can get on there. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, it's just reaching new audiences. And I feel like that's, you know, it's on one of my sort of top priorities to do. Yeah. And just to see what happens there, really. Mm-hmm. Give it a go.
Yeah. And Tom, I love what you said about it seems like there's an algorithm that's fighting against you at every turn. And so Crystal Grid is my electronic music project. And we've done a really good job at growing our Spotify numbers and focusing on our original productions. And we play live saxophone and drums over dubstep, which is a unique value proposition of its own. And we've been together since 2017, and we have a decent resume, but we sacrificed social media growth for a little bit just for music production growth and like spending all of our time there, which wasn't strategic. well, we thought it was, but it was strategic in the wrong way, unfortunately. And So now that we've been diving back into social media and really focusing on what the algorithm is liking in regards to the content that we're creating, and like we're certainly in the algorithm game right now. And so you had mentioned searching your playlist. How often are you doing that like spot check of let's search and see if it's popping up, where it's popping up? Like, how often are you checking that?
Not as much as I'd like, if I'm honest with you. I think with the in between obviously running the label and doing my own music as well, that kind of time to do sort of almost like health checkups, it's few and far between, unfortunately, just because the sheer amount of jobs that you have to undertake just to keep the label running, essentially. I do think it is something that's quite important. I think it's like most things nowadays, SEO seems to be like the way forward for everything. And when you don't, I personally don't have kind of any professional experience in, you know, SEO, what's trending, all this. But it's something that I wish I did, and I wish I did have that kind of skill set in my toolbox, you know, because it's, I think if you can get that, and if you can keep on top of trending topics, especially obviously the Spotify, YouTube is a whole different ball game, especially when it comes to trending stuff. So it's something that we're trying to get into, and it's a slow burner, but we're trying and we're learning as we're going. And again, I think that's just another thing that I need to keep in the back of my mind, that the success we've had on Spotify and Apple Music currently, you know, it's hard to do. So growing on a new platform as well, it's always going to be a slow process. Yeah. So you've got to celebrate the little wins just to keep yourself mentally, you know, ticking over. the SEO side of things, again, like I said, I wish I had more in regards to that. And I think it's something that artists, to some extent, but labels more need to be aware of. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that I can get some time to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so Tom, you mentioned the time management and also all of the different responsibilities that you have to undertake on a daily basis. So kind of walk us through like how you structure your days, man, to be able to stay on top of everything that you're doing.
Yeah. My wife will probably tell you that I don't structure them. It's, you know, it's difficult because I kind of liken it to spinning plates, you know. You're trying to keep things ticking. Obviously, the label's grown at quite a fast rate. So myself, I'm trying to, you know, make sure we have releases lined up, scheduled for, you know, X amount of months in advance. We're doing compilations. We're doing YouTube videos every week. And also, we're obviously trying to maintain artist relationships. You know, replying to emails is something I'm quite bad at. I need to get better at. And also spending time to listen to new submissions. Again, it's something that I need to improve at because, you know, as the label's grown, I've worked with quite a lot of artists. I think in total, we've worked with over 100 artists, wow, including main and features and stuff like that. Wow. You know, we're in the triple digits. So when you already have that, those relationships with artists you've worked with, sometimes when they send you a track, it's like, oh, cool. Like we've worked together. We know each other. Let's go. Yeah. But new submissions is something that I'm really looking to put in place, a new submissions process, so that it can sort of alleviate some of the pressure off me, mm-hmm, and, you know, and also be respectful and make sure that artists, if they send me music, the ears are on the music, you know, quick, you know. So, yeah, that's one thing that I need to work on. But in terms of a structure, sorry, I go off on tangents. I will always do that.
That's perfect, man. That's what podcasts are for.
Fantastic. But, yeah, in terms of a structure, really, it's it varies depending on where I'm at in the week. So, obviously, if I have my own music to create, which I try to look at releasing a single for myself every kind of 3 weeks, because I found that's for me is like the kind of sweet spot where, you know, if I release every 2 weeks, one, it's too much for myself. I don't have the time to produce a track to release every 2 weeks. And two, I find that it doesn't quite go far enough, that 2 week period doesn't quite go far enough to help it get into like radio playlists on Spotify, you know, and get the streams that way. So yeah, that kind of 3 week spot is the sweet spot for me. But then it'll come to like I have had this week where I've had a track out the last Friday and I haven't got a track lined up for 3 weeks time. So I'm like, right, put your producer head on, let's get behind the keyboard, let's do something. So I've had that this past sort of few days where my main focus has been creating for myself. Mm-hmm. As you know, we've got an autumn compilation coming up. I want to have a track on that alongside some amazing artists. I want to get a track out before the autumn compilation as well. So yeah, that's been my main priority. So that's, if I have like a priority within that, it goes as sort of like the first part of my day. Then if it's a long project, so like obviously creating a track, it can take a little while. So the breaks that I have from that, because, you know, as a producer, you need to take breaks. Otherwise, you are just going to be sitting there listening to the same 8-bar loop over and over, slowly deteriorating mentally. So, yeah, getting those breaks in, it'll be in the form of checking my emails, see what's coming in. It can vary from creating artwork for a release that's upcoming, creating social media posts for those as well, mm-hmm, taking some time to listen to some submissions. But generally breaking off sort of an hour or two in the middle of the day to go through that is what I've always found really helpful. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think where I was going with that then. Why was I?
Well, so Tom, those are I love the professional breakdown. Let's tie in the personal breakdown as well. Like, how are you keeping yourself energized through all of these administrative and creative tasks as well?
Coffee. Lots of coffee. Lots of coffee. Yeah, and I think, having the having these little breaks, obviously, you know, coffee is just something that you drink, but having that little coffee break is something completely different. Yeah. You know, it's taking the time out for yourself to have that little sit down. Same with lunch breaks as well. My wife and I, we both obviously work from home. Mm. She's just started doing that recently with a new job that she's got. So we have lunch together for the vast majority of days.
Great.
So we'll take that time out to have lunch together. We might watch an episode of something stupid on TV, or we might sit and talk, you know. But it's just taking your mind off of what you've got to do professionally within this. Hanging out with my dog as well.
Nice.
He's always the great refresher, Milo. You know, it's, having the sort of time, you know, having a walk with him, whether it's morning, lunchtime, just to clear your head. I like doing it in the morning as well, because it kind of, as I'm walking him, I can think about how my day's going to look, if I've got certain priorities that I need to do. Mm-hmm. You know, other times, if I am particularly stressed, then I'll just try not to think about work at all for the time being, and just have that half hour just to really reset. And then when I come back, it's game time.
Yeah. Well, and life as an entrepreneur can be so challenging. And are you working 7 days a week?
I was. I've recently kind of stopped because, again, obviously I've mentioned her a few times. She's one of the reasons why Low Fat Cafe even exists. It's my wife. So having that time to be able to spend with her, mm-hmm. Also to be able to see friends, in the back of your mind, obviously it's hard to switch off what you need to be doing. Mm-hmm. So there'll be a lot of the time where, you know, I might be thinking in the back of my mind, oh, I need to do this, but making sure, and she's very good at reminding me that I need to take those days sometimes for yourself, mm-hmm. or for us, to be able to sort of spend time together, and not burn out, because, you know, it's not sustainable if you're going to try and work 7 days a week. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think one of the big switch ups for me going from employed to self-employed was the fact that, you know, if I have the almost the freedom to work when I want, what's the point of having that if you're not going to use the time to sort of the flexibility to spend with family, to spend with friends when you need to, you know? So that's again, just another big thing on how my mindset kind of adjusts to that, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it's that's never ending. And I've been pursuing music full time almost 2 years at this point. And,
nice.
You know, I've probably worked every day, you know, aside from maybe like a family holiday, or if there's a large enough event where it's like, it's impossible for me to work. Right.
Yeah.
But if I'm home on the weekends, like I'm most likely working.
Yeah.
And it takes that self-discipline and self-management to give yourself the refreshers that you need, certainly. And it also, I mean, it takes a certain type of crazy to even want to be an entrepreneur, right? Like I share conversations with my friends where they're like, dude, I like my 9 to 5. I like showing up.
Yeah.
You tell me what to do. 5 o'clock, I'm out. I'm not thinking about work until, you know, I'm back in the office at 9.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, I wake up at 3 a.m. and I'm like, I might as well go to the studio.
Yeah.
I might as well start working. which is kind of my MO. Like if I lay in bed for more than 10 minutes, like in the middle of the night, I'm just going to go up and do whatever I'm thinking about because it's easier. Like I'll take a nap later.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when you're creating as well, though. Like if you have an idea in your mind, you know, I don't know about yourself, but I tend to be more creative in the evenings. I wish I was this morning person that could get up at 6 a.m, sit behind my setup and just create. But I can't, which I guess kind of having the label side of it does feed into that. Well, you know, if I can do the administrative tasks for the label when I'm not feeling creative. That tends to be, like I said, in the morning, but then afternoon, evening time, I can get creative and do it. But, you know, like you said, it's hard when you have that in the back of your mind. If you sat down or, you know, trying to get to sleep, if you've got something in the back of your mind, it is difficult to shake it without doing something about it, you know?
Yeah. And that's the life that we choose as entrepreneurs, but there's so many, for me, there's so many more pros than cons.
100%.
Yeah.
I think again, there's a security within a 9-to-5 of knowing what, obviously knowing the hours you're going to work, but also knowing the amount of money that you'll get at the end of the month.
Totally.
It's something that's one thing that I, you know, did like about that. But then obviously you are lining the pockets of someone else. You are essentially breaking your back for somebody else to profit from. That's, I think when it boils down to it, I don't think it can compare to just being your own boss. If you're ever able to be blessed enough to get in a position to do so, which, you know, it's very difficult to get to that position, but once you do, it feels, you know, it's one of the best feelings in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. Well, and then it's, you make that happen, and then you're fighting and clawing to make sure that you can keep it, man. Well, and that's, it is funny. Because like my biggest fear is having to get a real job, which is such a funny fear, right? Because if you have that conversation with anybody, everybody's like, yeah, everybody has a job.
I say that every time. It's like, you know, I'm just waiting for this bubble to burst and like, you know, our streams just go right down. And I'm like, right, I've got to wrap this up. I've got to just go work at a supermarket or something, or, you know, I've got to just get a job that actually, you know, I have to go out to do. And, you know, it's one of those things where I don't think that fear will ever go away.
No.
I know that doesn't sound aspirational for a podcast. You don't want to live with that, it depends how you use it. It depends how you use it. Mm-hmm. I use that as inspiration to keep driving. Totally. You know, I don't want to go back to an office job. You know, I don't want to be going back to working for someone else. Mm-hmm. I'm very happy doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing. So what can I do to keep this going? Mm-hmm. And I think that's, one way of looking at it.
Yeah. Well, Tom, I think you and I probably share our greatest fear, you know, with that being our greatest fear. And I certainly use it as fuel. And it's, you know, if I want to, there's being lazy, and then there's taking like a restorative break. And there's a very fine line between whatever that is. And so thinking about that fear typically drives me to, you know, to realize like, oh, I should probably just do whatever it is that I think that I should be doing. But we're so fortunate to have the opportunity to pursue music full time. And I think that was one of the blessings of the pandemic for many of us. One, it showed the instability of what we thought was stable life, right? We saw people that had 9-to-5 that worked 9-to-5 careers for 20 years, and then all of a sudden they're laid off. And it's like, what? That can go away? Like, that's just as unstable as starting your own business? Like, what? Certainly for
me. It's funny you should say that, because that is what happened with me.
Wow.
So when I was working at the record label, obviously the pandemic hit. We were working from home for months, and we continue to do so. Even once the sort of lockdowns got lifted, it was still, you know, work from home. And then I think it was about, I want to say like April 2021 is when I was let go from the record label. At that point, I was about 3 months into releasing Lo-Fi commercially. It had some just mind-blowing success at that point. Obviously, you know that, you know, in this industry, you get paid for the work you did 2-3 months ago when it comes to getting the money from distributors. Mm-hmm. So the money that came in initially was small. So about that time, like I said, I've been let go, and I was starting to see a small amount of money. My wife at the time obviously had a very stable job. She was a teacher at the time. So she was still working through the pandemic every day in schools and stuff. And she had a very stable job, as I said. So when it came to that, I was very fortunate in the fact that she was like, right, don't, I, at the time I was fully about to get just a regular job, because in the UK, getting a music industry job outside of London is, they're few and far between. Mm-hmm. So for me, my back of my mind, it was, right, what can I do to get money coming in straight away? She, on the other hand, was like, no, like, you can see this is going somewhere, your music. You focus on
Incredible.
That. And yeah, so again, like I said, I mentioned it before, without my wife, Lo-Fi Cafe wouldn't wow. be a thing. My music career wouldn't really be a thing. So yeah, it was, like I said, it was from that kind of horrible feeling of, I've been let go. This is, you know, it feels awful. Exactly mm-hmm. how you described it before, you know, your stable 9-to-5 has just suddenly gone. Yeah. So then being thrown into this, the full-time artist world is just, yeah, crazy.
Yeah. Well, and it's, wow. Well, kudos to your wife. And I have a similar situation where my fiance, she has had a stable career throughout the entire time that I quit my full-time job. And there's
nice.
Yeah, there's no way that I would have been able to without her support or encouragement yeah. to be like, go for it, man. Which is great. Well, and they, you know, they get to see us work every day, right? She also works exactly. from home, so they get to see the hustle. You know, I think if it got to the point that we weren't hustling, I'd say they'd probably be like, all right, go get the job.
Yeah, absolutely. Or if there's any time where I'm like, if I've maybe taken too long of a break, because sometimes I can do that, you know, if I ever just have a day where I might just sit down and play a little bit of Xbox, and then it's a bit like, right, Tom, you've been on there a couple of hours now. Like, come on, you have got stuff to do. It's like, yeah, I definitely do. Let's go.
Which is,
but she's great.
Well, that
she. I don't know if it's the same with you, but I she helps me a lot with kind of artwork ideas, wow. naming ideas, track names. I think the vast majority of my track names come from her, because Incredible. she has the ability to sit down and listen to something and go, oh, I'm getting this, and just keep spitballing ideas. And then, yeah, so it's like I said, she's my rock. She's the reason why this is a thing for me. So yeah,
wonderful, Tom. We'll make sure to highlight that part so she can listen back through this episode.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm bookmarking that. I'm going to send it to her and just say, just listen to this. If you're not going to listen to it all, listen to this.
Just listen. To this one section. Yeah, well, we're lucky, man. And Tom, I do know that I think you're playing a little basketball in a little bit. Is that true?
I am. I've got another hour. I'll probably have to sit off in about 45.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, we can get another 10 in. Another 10 minutes in.
Sweet.
Yeah, well, that's awesome that we share a similarity in that respect. And it's, you know, a part of the reason why I hustle so hard is to, you know, hopefully be able to repay the favor, you know, hopefully yeah. that'd be awesome one day of like, hey, you quit your job. Like, I got you.
Yeah.
Like, which would be, you know, is the dream and is certainly what I'm working towards. And, but Tom,
it would, but I also feel like my wife, if I ever said, oh, do you want to just quit your job? Like, we're making good money, quit your job and you could be at home with me all day. She probably wouldn't want that anyway. So, I, you know, as great a dream as that is for me, I don't think she'd want that. Yeah.
Which is beautiful. That's beautiful in its own right as well. So Tom, so you mentioned playing basketball, man. So like, what does, and you're obviously a sports fan. So what does like sports and training, like what does that look like for you?
Essentially it's all fun to me. You know, I don't have like I'd love to sit here and say I'm a big gym freak and I go to the gym 7 times a week and all this. Nah, like it's not that. I've always found sports a very, very fun way of letting off steam. Mm-hmm. Basketball I used to play when I was like between the age of like 16 to 18. We used to play like in a little league in Manchester. Then I went off to uni and didn't keep it up, so it's only something I've gotten back into in sort of recent months. Oh, cool. But we've got a regular sort of game going with some friends, and it's just fun, you know. Mm. It's obviously it's healthy, you know. It's I'm assuming you've played basketball at some yeah. level. Like it's tiring. It's mm-hmm. absolutely tiring. But it's just a great way of letting off some steam. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not thinking about work when I'm out on the court playing that. It's the same with any other sports, you know, football, soccer, sorry. you know, any other sports like that, if you're playing it, you're not really thinking about anything else Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry, that was my watch.
Yeah, no worries, man.
I'll do that again. So it's the same with any other sports. If you're playing it, you're not thinking about other things. You're not thinking about any worries or stresses. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about the sport that you're playing. So it's a big thing for me. I would, if I could play basketball a few times a week and not ache every single moment of every single day, I would. And we're hoping to sort of play a little bit competitively soon. We had a game last week. It was just a friendly, but it was against a team who do play regularly. Mm. And it was just so much fun. And it brought back memories of playing when I was like, playing competitively when I was like 16 to 18. And, you know, so I think that's hopefully, fingers crossed, something I can get going soon.
Yeah. So are you guys playing outside, inside?
Inside. Oh, come on. It's England. We have like 2 days of sun a year at the minute. And yeah, it's raining all the time at the minute. It's horrible.
That's hilarious.
Although when we're in, obviously I mentioned about San Diego, me and my wife were there. We did the one driving up the coast.
Yeah.
And on the day between LA and San Francisco, the most beautiful stretch of the road, it was heaving it down with rain. Like you couldn't see out
the
like
first time past- in a decade.
Yeah. So it was like, right, that's great. Like we've come to America to get away from the rain and this is what we've got.
So Tom, are they the team that you played against competitively, friendly competitively? Are they in like a league?
I think so. One of the guys that we play with, he knows them. So he sort of knows where they play. I did used to play in a league that was in Manchester. I think it's still going, so I'm hoping that that's something that can get up. That'll be about every Thursday, I think. Every week we'll be playing there.
Awesome.
Which so happens to be my busy night, because obviously we have releases every Friday. So now I've had to shift everything that I used to do Thursday night. I do it to like Thursday afternoon. And then Friday is the obviously the big day for releases for us.
Well, I think there's something so powerful in having some sort of training or sport routine, and I say that I'm super biased, so I run ultra marathons. So like
I heard you mention this in another episode and I was like, what is an ultra marathon? I want to know.
So anything over a regular distance marathon. So 26.2 miles is a regular distance marathon. And so my standard distance for ultra marathons is 50 kilometers.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I realize how ridiculous that is, but that has
been, it is.
that's become like my, I'm running one on Saturday in the mountains with one of my buddies. And, for me, dude, I think like I guess physical training has been such a large portion of my life. So growing up, like wrestling was my main focus. Folk style wrestling and which is a grueling sport. And I was fortunate enough to grow up near a really successful program. So, I'd been coached by, had at least like practices ran by like five gold medalists, Olympic gold medalists.
Oh,
and, so that was just the culture I was around. And so, it just became so like, I have to do it. Otherwise I'm not happy. And like, really? And unfortunately that's progressed to 50 kilometer distances to scratch that itch, which good or bad. It's like, man, I wish maybe it could be a little less to scratch that itch. But,
and do you think that's kind of fed into like a competitive nature within yourself, that you may have brought into the music world or
100%.
The business world?
Oh, totally, man. So athletics was my number one focus growing up, but I went to a small enough school where I played the saxophone the entire time, but nice. I could be involved in multiple things. And so my identity was certainly wrestling and athletics. And when I went to university, it wasn't until my 20th birthday, so sophomore year, I had this life epiphany, essentially, where I'm like, I'm driving from Phoenix to my school in Colorado, driving through the middle of the desert, had just gone to this really fun festival. And I was like, what would happen if I brought the same mentality that I did towards wrestling? Like, what if I fused that into music? And then I did. And so it's been a long journey since then. But it's an internal competitiveness rather than external competitiveness. I don't feel competitive with other people. It's just how hard can I work? And
I feel like when you start bringing that into the music world, you kind of then start going in, as we mentioned at the very start of the podcast, how all these other genres feel a little bit, you know, everybody's trying to fight each mm-hmm. other and, you know, nobody's trying to help each other lift yeah. anybody up. I feel like that's when it becomes a problem mm-hmm. if you're going to bring that into to the music world, you know.
Yeah, it is. And fortunately, most of my projects are collaborative projects. So it's like, how hard can I work to like to either match or work? I guess it's competitive with my business partners of like, I want to work harder than my business partners, which is a good thing.
Absolutely.
Which is great. Cause I think that then it's friendly competition of like, hey man, how hard can we work? And like, I'm going to work this hard today. Or if my business partner outworks me, you know, it's like, oh, that next day, like I'm excited to work hard, which is then good for our business, which I suppose is good. But yeah, most of it does come internally. And I ran an ultramarathon 6 weeks ago, I think. And I got second place. And that,
oh, wow, nice.
And I didn't realize I was in second place until the final, I think, like 8 mile stretch. Like I came into the aid station, like we're in the middle of the mountains. You don't see anybody for hours. And I, you know, like I learned that I was in second place. And that was the first time in a lot of years where it was like competitive against another individual of like, I'm in second place. Like, okay, I'm not going to let anybody pass me. And, and that did feel that it felt good to let that loose. But I feel like with running, man, I get so much release, and I run 5 days a week, and there's I just feel so much better after.
It does. I mean, obviously there's, we can, you know, talk all night about the science behind it, but mm-hmm. it's just something that just makes you feel better. Even if your body's aching, like I come back from basketball hobbling, just like, right, I'm in pain. Let me just sit down. Mm-hmm. But, you know, once you get past that stage, it's something that really helps you. And like I said, I think the pros of just being able to forget your work stresses mm-hmm. is just, you can't buy that anywhere.
No, you can't. If you did, it'd be the best drug on the market, man.
Oh, absolutely.
Tom, so final question, man. If there's an up-and-coming artist listening right now, what is some of the best advice that you could give them for growing their project, given like the 2023 landscape?
I think it's never stop learning. It's something that as a new artist, especially, you know, you obviously you need the drive. You've got to assume that you have the drive to be able to do this in the first place. But to have that kind of hunger to learn, whether it's new techniques, learning from artists or peers within the genre, even learning from somebody like, somebody like myself, who's a label person who has that kind of vision of what sound they want for their label. Just being able to kind of tie in those kind of things together is something I think is invaluable for an artist. The quality of your music will go up. Your playlist placements will go up as well. I think it won't be an immediate success, but having that ability to keep pushing and keep learning and progressing. I think the second you stop progressing is, you know, you're in trouble there. Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot lose that desire to keep learning, keep bettering yourself. That would, for me, would be absolutely key. Yeah.
Beautiful, Tom. We're going to end it on that. That was perfect. Tom, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story, sharing the story of Lo-Fi Cafe, man. I'll make sure to put all the links in the show notes, and really appreciate you being willing to share this conversation with me, man.
No, thank you for having me on and letting me just spout everything. I really appreciate it, man.
Of course, man. I like hearing myself talk. That's why I started a podcast. So it's fun. We'll get you back on soon, Tom.
Love it, mate. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you, man. Everybody tuning in, as always, thank you for listening. Much love. Peace.